Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news up to the 4th of May 2020. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Well, our first story, Kate, asks, what's gone wrong with leadership at firms that won't give COVID-19 refunds? Two UK watchdogs have been forced to intervene with the private sector following complaints over firms withholding refunds for cancelled services amid the COVID-19 crisis. The Competition and Markets Authority recently announced that it has opened a probe into companies' cancellation and refund policies, as relevant consumer complaints now account for 4 out of every 5 complaints the body receives. So far, it said, concerns include people being pressurised to accept vouchers for holiday accommodation, which can only be used during a more expensive period, wedding venues refusing to refund any money and telling people to claim on their insurance, and nurseries asking people to pay very high sums in order to keep a place open for their child. Just a few days before the CMA statement, the Civil Aviation Authority spoke out about similar issues involving the nation's airlines. In particular, reports that Ryanair has been issuing would-be passengers with vouchers for cancelled flights rather than the refunds they had requested. Kate, what has gone wrong with leadership at the firms that are failing to comply with basic legal requirements?
Well, I think the first question to ask, are we surprised? Are we surprised at some of these practices? I think particularly Ryanair always seems to be in hot water about how they don't really put the customer first. But every firm or many firms are in survival mode at the moment and struggling to survive. And then higher level concerns they might think are not important. But of course, ethical behaviour is doing the right thing all the time, not just when it suits you or where you feel you can afford to do it. So the values that these companies will probably have on their walls, will have on their websites, are really being tested. And a real test is that after this, when business resumes, however it does, can you actually say, we're proud of the way we behaved during the COVID-19 crisis? We looked after our employees, we looked after our customers. And it's a lot more. I mean, the ones that are not obeying the law, well, that's absolutely reprehensible. But those that are using grants, using clauses to their advantage, when actually it's not the morally right thing to do, they are going to have to answer questions. And people will remember. And when people have a choice of who to fly with, who to insure with, who to book a holiday with, they'll remember that if something goes wrong, and we'll all know about something going wrong now, they're not the ones, they will not be their first choice.
Okay, Kate, thank you. Our next story is taken from BBC Business News, reporting that Barclays boss Jes Staley has said that having thousands of bank workers in big, expensive city offices may be a thing of the past. About 70,000 of Barclays staff worldwide are working from home due to coronavirus lockdown measures, and this has led to a rethink of the bank's long-term location strategy. It came as Barclays warned the pandemic could cost it some £2.1 billion due to customers being unable to repay loans. Staley added that in the future, retail branches could be used by investment banking and call centre workers, hinting at an end to long-term commutes for some workers. There will be a long-term adjustment to our location strategy, Mr. Staley told reporters. The notion of putting 7,000 people in the building may be a thing of the past. Kate, my question is, will other leaders take the lockdown measures as an opportunity to review their use of large office buildings?
Well, they'd be foolish not to, wouldn't they? I mean, they've seen how people are able to work at home, how many things have been able to done online, how much less travel is needed when before that didn't seem to be the case or there was a real resistance to it. I think what's really funny about this is the Mr. Staley insisting that we'll need a long-term adjustment to our location strategy when we had such a short-term non-strategy, if you like, to flipping to at-home working. And that, to me, is such an organisational type response. Something amazing has happened in terms of people's learning, their agility, their adaptability. But what we really need is a strategy. I think we need to celebrate how well people have made that transition and look at the benefits for the employee and the customer, not to try and benefit one group over the others. If the employees can get to a local office more easily, great. Still have all the safety, the firewall precautions in place, still be able to talk to colleagues. This is a real opportunity, and it would be unfortunate if it was spoiled by turning it into something that is long-term, slow, and all the things that we haven't experienced recently.
Well, thank you, Kate. I suppose an aside of that is that in the future, there may be many buildings lying empty that could be used for other purposes.
Well, if you remember from our webinar last week, Rod, we had Steve Wells talking about how this might be an opportunity to repurpose, reimagine city centres. And rather than be full of offices and shops, they might again be places where people live. And so these buildings won't be empty. They will be repurposed, as I say, and different. Things will be different. And that's undoubtedly the case. And that will include our cities.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from Bloomberg News, and it's a story that the pandemic workday has obliterated work-life balance. Michelle Davis and Jeff Green write that America's always-on work culture has reached new heights. Whatever boundaries remain between work and life have almost disappeared, and people are overworked, stressed, and eager to get back to the office. In the United States, homebound employees are logging 3 hours more per day on the job than before city and statewide lockdowns, according to data from NordVPN, which tracks when users connect and disconnect from its service. Out of all countries that NordVPN tracked, US workers have tacked on the most hours. In France, Spain, and UK, the day has stretched an additional 2 hours, and NordVPN's data found that only Italy saw no change at all. The contours of the workday have changed too. Without commutes, wake-up times have shifted later, NordVPN found, but peak email time has crept up an hour to 9 a.m., according to data from email client Superhuman. Employees are also logging back in late at night. Surfshark, another VPN provider, has seen spikes in usage from midnight to 3 a.m. that were not present before the COVID-19 outbreak. Kate, how can leaders ensure work-life boundaries are respected when their employees are forcibly working from home?
Well, for all those people who used to work at home and be accused by their colleagues of shirking and not really working, this is a lesson to all of them, how much harder people do tend to work at home. It isn't good to see the working day stretch, but if that means in some ways that people are able to log off and log back in again, and better manage their time, because we do know that people have got a lot going on at home and are not just there to work, with all the competing domestic responsibilities and sharing the space with other people trying to work. But when it comes to work-life balance, it's the duty of the employer to support and understand that people burning out is no good. People being too stressed, too anxious that they're not performing at their best, we don't want that either. And this insight that managers have been getting into the whole lives of their employees is going to be really useful in having those conversations about how shall we work differently? How shall we take advantage of these new skills we have in remote working? And how can we make them work for the employee, for the employer? And it's only when you have those two-way conversations that you'll come up with something that is a genuine benefit and not somehow a zero-sum situation.
Thank you, Kate. Our final story is from John Anderer at Study Finds that suggests smart speakers may soon act as public speaking coaches. Researchers from Penn State University have developed a program that turns Amazon's Alexa into a public speaking coach. The public speaking tutoring program teaches users cognitive restructuring exercise, a psychological technique designed to alleviate anxiety whilst recognizing and changing negative thought patterns. The program was given a test run for this study, and it successfully alleviated participants' pre-speech anxiety. Kate, you are currently running a series of coaching webinars for the Institute. How would you feel about a smart speaker delivering a webinar on coaching conversations?
Well, I'm not at all surprised that this is being suggested. We've had spell checkers for decades, grammar improvers, we've got online translation. Capability of AI is limitless, isn't it? And now we have voice-activated software that we've both experienced joining in our various presentations in the last couple of weeks. Yes, what a great tool for helping you relax before a presentation, to give you advice as to whether you should speed up, slow down, whether you're using too many ums or ahs or whatever it is that you could be given feedback on. If we have a situation where there's a virtual speaker, well, there's no human connection, is there? And I think one of the things that are proving popular about our webinars is that they're live, we have real people there every day discussing the problems that we are facing at the moment, and how can a smart speaker really understand what it's like to be in lockdown, really understand what it's like not to be able to see your family, your work colleagues, to have to queue to go to the shops? There's no empathy there, is there? And how can there be? But absolutely great role for them. But I don't think they're taking us over yet, Rod.
Okay, thank you very much, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. And unless Alexa takes over, Kate and I will be with you next week. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thanks, Rod.